This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hour three, let's keep it moving along here on Sharp Money. I'm Joe Serralo in for Patrick Maher today alongside Dustin Sweetelson as we get ready for the final hour of the show. Dustin, it's been an eventful one. Great guest lineup. Some really fun MLB plays. An earthquake. I mean, you could have seen this one coming.
Natural disasters, and I'm just talking about my bet on the Blue Jays in the first five as they're losing 7-5 in the bottom of the fifth right now. Even Cedric Mullins getting in on it, driving in runs. So,
referencing my parents' nickname for me, natural disaster.
Yeah, well, I'm a natural disaster to my parents' bank account when I was younger, so that's what I was. So, yeah, look, it's a fun time in baseball because we're going to finally see a line be drawn with a lot of these teams at the deadline, where some teams are going to be tanking the rest of the way, playing scrubs, and other teams are pushing their chips to the middle. And that's the fun of this time of year betting baseball.
Oh, yeah. The Buyers, the Sellers, and the Chicago Cubs, whatever the hell they are. I think there's a game we both have some action in here. Phillies, Yankees, Citizens Bank Park, intriguing pitching matchup. Luis Gil against Zach Wheeler. Dustin, what do you like in this one?
Yeah, I'm going to back Zach Wheeler to be the slump buster here for the Phils. Look, I know the Yankees won 2-3 at Boston and Philly lost 2-3 at Cleveland, but if you look at Zach Wheeler's numbers in his career, July is the second best month when they combine September and October when they do this. 3.02 ERA. He's a guy who's built to get better as the season goes on. I'll back the better pitcher where Luis Hill's a rookie, a young guy, not used to throwing this deep in the year. Let's take the Phillies in game one of this three-game set.
Dustin, I'm with you, man. It's a slightly different angle, but it's almost an exact price. Phillies first five. I'm laying $1.35 on this one. I think on the money line, they're currently -140. But you like the Phillies money line. I like them first five. Zach Wheeler's been lights out at home this year. Current Yanks hitters, a 36% K rate against him. I think Zach Wheeler, even though Luis Gil has good numbers, he's been in a slump lately. Clear advantage, Phillies. I like him first five. Dustin likes him on the money line. And now I'd like to hit the progressive guest line and welcome in our guy, professional bettor, Chris Farley, to the show, who finished fifth place just a couple years ago, 2021, in the Circa Millions contest. Always incredible if you are able to place in that contest. So, Chris, how you doing? I'm assuming you're excited for the upcoming contest. I want to know, what is your strategy? How has it changed? How has it grown? What's new? What's staying the same for the upcoming Circa contest?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me, as always, guys. It's tough to talk about strategy, especially in today's, betting sphere. Everyone's running their models, right? Obviously, there's a competitive aspect, right? In some of these contests, you have to be aware of what other people are picking, right? When you think about Circa Millions, some of those weeks, those lines move, people get advantageous lines. Maybe you don't take that line that everybody took because it seems so great leading up into the weekend so that you can be a little contrarian. But I'm going to talk about something here, guys, that's a little different. I think a lot of it just happens to do with mindfulness, your own preparation, the way that you create space in your own life. I mean, these contests, you can feel the pressure at the end, right? Like if you're in Survivor, it's week 14, there's only a few weeks left. You could be in a huge pot of money there at Circa. So it's really about creating the space and the time for yourself and the routines every single week to make sure that you like carve that out, right, in your own world, in your own life, because we all have busy lives. But then just kind of let it go. I know great bettors like Las Vegas Chris talks about that. When we start to obsess over these things, when we overanalyze, is when we can really get in trouble, especially in these contests. And at the end of the day, especially in a contest like Survivor, right? Of course, it's you against you. You just have to survive. But even in ATS contests, if you're hitting at a certain number, you're going to be in at least the running, top 25, top 50, probably if you hit over 65%, which I know that's not easy, right? But at the end of the day, it's still a competition against yourself. And it's really about just creating an atmosphere around you where you can handle it without being too stressed and without overanalyzing.
Chris is as good as it gets when it comes to just handicapping. I mean, a bunch of sports, basketball, the NFL, obviously. Read his work over sportswagers.live as well. And look, I love the strategy. We'll get more into that as we get closer to the contest as well, as these things start to go live. But I want to pick your brain on some bets, because I asked you what you were on, And you threw a team in week one where you're catching the points with them in the AFC South that I have to tell you, I'm not saying that the Tennessee Titans are going to be good, Chris, but I'm saying I'm intrigued by a lot of the changes going on down there, despite being a Mike Vrabel guy. Tell me what you're doing with the Titans in week one.
I'm a big time Mike Vrabel guy too. Wow, if I could say it. And so that really surprised me when he wasn't with the Titans anymore. But I kind of get it, right? It's a new regime. No more Derrick Henry, right? They think they have their guy, at least in Will Levis. And one thing about Will Levis, you know, we saw him in a few games last year, right? We saw him that game at Miami. Nobody expected Tennessee to even hang in that game, let alone win that game. This kid has fight, you know, he's got some moxie behind him. And I think the team, you know, responds to him in those situations, and they brought over some damn good talent there to help him out at the wide receiver position, you know, Tyler Boyd. I mean, they're looking better around DeAndre Hopkins at least. So this is going to become, I think, possibly a more potent air attack. And they still got Tony Pollard, right? Like, you know, bringing in Tony Pollard, I'm not sure what's going on with the Cowboys. We never know what's going on with the Cowboys and scenes leading up until the season. But I'm not sure why they had to give him up. It's all good. But that's a great replacement for Derrick Henry. I mean, he's not Derrick Henry, but he's a workhorse back. No, he's a professional running back there. They still have a pretty decent offensive line when it comes to run blocking. And Will Levis, year two, I think he could be a little frisky. I know probably a lot of guys already talked about this on the show, but Titans plus 4.5 week one. I mean, gentlemen, a lot has to go right, if you ask me, for the Chicago Bears to just go right into week one, right, and just start looking like this totally different operation, which we expect to win. No chance that a rookie quarterback should be having that many points behind him in week one. I don't care if it's Caleb Williams or, you know, year one Peyton Manning, year one Trevor Lawrence. I mean, we've seen how a lot of these guys have been in their first seasons too. It doesn't quite, you know, stack up to what the expectations are. So I know the expectations are high for Caleb Williams. I think he's a great kid with a better mentality than I actually thought, you know, coming out of the cushy environment of Southern California. But it's still week one. It's still the NFL, guys, right? And the Titans plus 4.5, I think they're going to take that personally.
Yeah, Chris, I like that handicap a lot. When you look at Caleb, now look, you know, maybe there's a chance Chicago goes in there and that they win it, you know, 20-13, and they win by a touchdown and cover. But like you said, a lot has to go right, no matter how good the rookie quarterback is, for that to be the case. I want to shift gears, though, a little bit, and look at the NFC East, because this seems to be such a polarizing discussion, whether it's Dallas's division again, mind you, it's been 2 decades since a team repeated atop the NFC East, or whether the Eagles right the ship that just went so wrong the second half of last season, and they regain their spot atop the NFC East. What's your favorite way to handicap that Dallas-Philadelphia, whether it's a division, a win total, how things shape out there atop that division?
Yeah, I'm happy to go under Dallas Cowboys 10.5 this season. I would actually lean under to the Eagles too, but I don't think there's any denying that the Eagles in their reload, you know, bringing over some of the guys that they did, you know, replacing defensive coordinator with a seasoned guy. I think the Eagles are going to be better. Now, obviously, when you're missing a stalwart center like Jason Kelce, like I'm going to just have to see how that operation runs, how smoothly it runs right from the start of the season. Cause I, as we've been told, he does a lot for that offense and he did a lot for that offensive line, every single play, kind of the, you know, mental number two behind the quarterback. So, I mean, they are still absolutely stacked on offensive line. As a Giants fan, I hate the fact that Saquon is over there, but what are you going to do, guys? So, you know, I think that could be an explosive offense. When we look at the Cowboys, you know, Mike Zimmer coming in as their defensive coordinator. The thing about Dan Quinn, you know, I mean, Mike Zimmer is a respected guy in the NFL, obviously, but Dan Quinn is more of a player's coach. You know, I think that he can adjust to this newer generation. I think that was part of the issue with Mike Zimmer in the past as a head coach. I don't like the fit for him in Dallas, and they're already really porous. I mean, they just lost a guy on their defensive line. It's looking more and more shallow besides Micah Parsons. I don't know. This Cowboys team just seems all over the place. They didn't do much in the offseason. I expect them to regress, and watch out for those Washington Commanders. I talked about this on a previous Vision show. I just think that's a team that could really surprise a lot of people. Jaden Daniels, a better quarterback I think, than a lot of people might be expecting too. You only hear positive things. And now they have a professional head coach over there in Dan Quinn that wants another shot at this thing. So, you know, and of course he knows the Dallas Cowboys very well. So I think Dallas takes a step down. I think Washington is a little surprising. I'm not going to even talk about my Giants because this, what I'm seeing on Hard Knocks just, I don't trust this team, but Dallas below 10.5 for me.
Painful being a Giants fan right now.
Likewise. I'm in that mix as well. Real quick, let's see if we can sneak this in. One more bet here. AFC East, who's winning it out of that group?
I like the Miami Dolphins. For the value that we're getting on the Miami Dolphins now, no one's really talking. You know, I know that Tyreek Hill is going to get his deal, right? Tua just got his deal. I get it. But, so they're kind of being talked about now. But if you compare them to the Jets, the Bills still expected to go in there with Keon Coleman to be, he's going to have to be a big deal for that offense, I think, if it's going to run smoothly or it's too much on Josh Allen. Meanwhile, the Miami Dolphins have reloaded. They still have a lot of their same guys. I liked that they brought over Anthony Weaver, defensive coordinator, comes from the Ravens. That's a very good background there. You know, no one's talking about the Mike McDaniel-led team that in his first season, right, he beat the Ravens, the Patriots, and some other really good team that first season. The Dolphins, I think, is a team that nobody should sleep on in the AFC East. And, I'm not gonna trust those Jets, boys. I'm not going to trust the Jets until I see it all come together. Don't like Robert Saleh as a coach. And I think Aaron Rodgers probably acts like a diva at some point during the season. So, Miami Dolphins love that they're not being talked about as much.
Yeah, great stuff, Chris. Dolphins, Jets, but I mean, it's just such a wild top of the AFC East. You can argue any team might win the division. You can also argue it might be done at 9-8. Go figure that one. Chris, appreciate the time, man.
Thanks so much, guys. Love being on here.
More on Sharp Money after this, guys. Don't go anywhere. Predictions and pro, as in become a VSiN pro subscriber and get an all access pass to our betting tools, betting splits, and the 2024 college football betting guide. Thursday's release of the college football guide and our previously released NFL betting guide will have you ready to turn a profit on the gridiron this year. The only way to get the guides and everything we have to offer here at VSiN is to be a VSiN pro subscriber. So head on over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now and become one. As we keep it moving here, hour three of Sharp Money. Patrick Maher out right now. Joe Cirillo, that's me, in alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, it's time for three up, three down, my man. Let's look at who's hot and who's not.
Joseph Cirillo. We should have a drop for that every time you say your name. All right, it's obviously Paul Skeens Day. And Paul Skeens has been hot, I don't know, going back like 3 years now with that mustache, but hot in Major League Baseball since he made his debut. And just want to look at over his last four starts, what he's done. And by the way, Joe, I want to point out, I tried fading this guy a couple months ago in the Rookie of the Year market, thinking the Pirates would be out of it and shutting him down. So I was all over Yamamoto to win the NL Rookie of the Year. What happens? Yamamoto makes one more start, hits the IL. Paul Skeens, just the trajectory, just all the way up. This is how dominant this guy's been. Over his last four, 28 and a third innings pitched, 36 strikeouts, a .67 whip, four quality starts, 36 Ks, as I mentioned. He's taking on the Houston Astros. We want to find out how legit Paul Skeens is. Let's see how he does against this veteran lineup. And I think he's going to do well, and the props would tell us he's going to do well. Strikeouts prop set at 7.5 over at DraftKings, over plus 115, under minus 145. I think he has a chance to go over that. I'm not a big strikeout props guy, but I do think he can miss some bats here, taking on Jake Bloss on the other side, where somehow, Joe, the Pittsburgh Pirates are a favorite at Minute Maid Park.
In Houston. Isn't that crazy, Dustin? Who would have thought?
Yeah, it's crazy.
When you look at how to cap this, what's intriguing to me, I always find it really interesting when you've got different numbers at some of the big shops, right? So Paul Skeens, it's moved back. It was 7.5 across the board. FanDuel, for a minute, had lowered it to 6.5, laying $1.50 to the over. It's back 7.5 plus 105 to the over. I'm curious, though, even though that's no longer a possibility, where do you sit on that? If you were going to bet the K-prop, would you want the plus money and go with him to get eight strikeouts, which, I mean, he's gotten eight or more in eight of his last nine starts. Or would you want to play it safe, lay the extra juice, and go 6.5? Because Houston is one of the toughest teams to strike out in baseball. Third toughest team to K at home, just 6.75 Ks per game. Which way, which angle would you take to that? And then I'll get into my official bet that I have on this game.
What was that juice on 6.5?
Minus 150 versus plus 105 for the extra strikeout.
I don't love laying 150 juice on player props. He might be one player I wouldn't mind doing it on in that regard. But here's the thing you have to understand about betting player props in any sport. There's more working against the over than there is working on the under. Meaning he could get hit by a line drive and get taken out of the game. He could tweak something in his hamstring, get taken out of the game. There's a lot that can go wrong where you could end up losing it on the over. The under always has the edge and like weird things happening. Because of that, I don't love paying 150 juice, but I'd rather have the number of 6.5 with a guy like him who's gone over that number pretty regularly in his major league starts. So in this one case isolation, I'll take Paul Skenes at over 6.5 minus 150.
Yeah, now last time 6.5 was available on Skenes, I actually took it. It was against the Braves. I might have laid $1.50, come to think of it. And he had six going into his last inning. What did he do? Strike out the side, finished with nine. Like I said, he's gone for eight or more in eight of his last nine. But the K prop isn't where I'm going with this one. It's over 18.5 outs at plus 110. This is a guy who's gone for 21 or more outs, or actually 20 or more. He's gone over this mark nonetheless in three straight and four out of five. Now, Skenes is pretty economical and pretty efficient. We've seen him strike out 11 in eight innings, right? So it's not like strikeouts equal an absurdly high pitch count for this guy. But let's say Houston isn't striking out much because they don't at home. Like I said, 6.75 per game. They put the ball in play. Well, that means Skenes is probably going to be recording outs at a quicker rate than if his strikeouts were through the moon. So I'm going to take Skenes over 18.5 outs. If the Pirates win this game, he's probably going to have to give them seven stud filled innings, and at plus money, that's the play I'm going with. Dustin, what do you think? Outs recorded, K's, which do you like more? If it's the same plus 110, is it the over 7.5 K's or the over 18.5 outs?
I'd still go back to the strikeout just because that's what he does, and there's some power bats in that Houston lineup who could swing and miss. I'm concerned about outs recorded just because this is a deeper lineup than most pitchers are used to facing. And oh, by the way, they're kind of heating up at the right time. As someone who has 18, 19 to one of them to win the World Series, loved what I saw with them against the Dodgers over the weekend offensively. I think these bats are coming to alive. So I'd stay away from the outs recorded, go towards the strikeouts, because, I mean, he could get six in the first, I don't know, three innings.
That's true. Hey, look, we could talk about Paul Skenes all day, but the segment's called Three Up, Three Down. Let's get to our second up. Minnesota, that lineup against left-handed pitching. They take on our Mets tonight, Dustin. What are the Twins doing to lefties this year?
So they are crushing left-handed pitching. They are first in OPS. They are first in batting average, 12th in home runs. But again, that's about opportunity because that's just accumulating for the year. Per game, they're as good as anyone in hitting home runs against lefties. Royce Lewis is healthy. Jose Miranda is back in the lineup. He's healthy. Those are two notorious lefty killers in this lineup. They're on the road taking on the Mets. They're even money against Jose Quintana. Jose Quintana is mid, if mid ever had a definition, in a dictionary. He is a middle of the rotation back end guy, and he's just not special, doesn't have dominant stuff. And I think Minnesota's going to hit him around. And another element in this game and why I'm backing the Twins today, Simeon Woods Richardson, he's a former Mets prospect traded to the Twins. Because of that, I like that little revenge angle. I like Minnesota's offense better than our Mets. I'll take even money on a team I think that's going to do a lot of work offensively today.
Woods Richardson went to Toronto back in that deal. I got the Mets' Marcus Stroman. Remember that once upon a time. Third up, we already talked about him a little bit. The Seattle Mariners against Nick Pivetta.
Yeah, shout out to Anthony Kay, also a part of that deal. Look. Seattle Mariners offense bolstered a bit by a Rosarena trade the other day. Also at Justin Turner today. He won't be available, obviously. The Seattle bats came alive against the White Sox over the weekend. I expect them to continue to do some hitting. Nick Pivetta against the Mariners does not have very good numbers. In a 61 at bat sample size, it's not massive. These Seattle hitters have a 311 average, 6 homers, 9 ribbies, and a 1200 OPS. Because of that, I do like the Mariners with Logan Gilbert on the bump as a minus 105 bet today. I think you're getting a massive discount on the better pitcher. And oh, by the way, the hitters in this lineup that's been light hitting of late this year, they have good numbers against Pivetta.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, don't rule Justin Turner out. I think just
that's
for the
fair.
Making part of it. Going from Baltimore to Boston, if they even just get him a pinch hit AB, that would be insane. Imagine he records two hits for two teams in one day. How about three down, Dustin? Jameson Taillon going for the Cubs. He's had a great year. He's a hot name at the deadline right now. Why is he on our three down list?
All right, this jumped out to me. Taillon at Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati. He has been absolutely abysmal, by the way. Minus 112 on him, minus 108 on the Reds and Carson Spires. But Taillon at Cincinnati in his career, 43 innings, a 6.07 ERA, a 1.51 whip. I'm not saying you can back Cincinnati in this spot, but it's a game where I'd think about that over 9 right now.
Ooh, okay. I like it. In all fairness, by the way, Dustin, you know, as a former pitcher myself, Great American Ballpark, impossible place to pitch. So well, I cut him a little slack there.
That's why when I saw Ty France was traded there today, I said, oh, that's interesting because he used to be a good contact guy. Maybe there's more power there.
Oh, yeah. 90 seconds left here. These two kind of go hand in hand for three down. You got the Nationals lineup against left-handed pitching. And then the Nationals starter tonight, Mitchell Parker, your second and third down.
Yeah, and I should note, I'm not just doing these based on my bets, but doing these helps me come up with my bets. And these next two involve, as you mentioned, the Nats and the Diamondbacks game, where Jordan Montgomery's a $1.62 favorite at home, taking on Mitchell Parker, plus 136. The total set at 9. The Washington Nationals, they don't hit lefties, and Mitchell Parker's been bad of late. Over his last 5 starts, Parker's got a 7.89 ERA, a 1.57 whip, been getting knocked around. Now he's on the road in Arizona. Ball should fly, except off the Washington bats, Joe, where they are 24th in average against southpaws. They are 29th in home runs and 28th in OPS. I like backing the D-backs if you can in this one. Fade Washington.
Boom. I love it. And oh, by the way, Dustin, this is set up beautifully to lead me into my fifth and final MLB play of the evening because it's Mitchell Parker over 2.5 earned runs. I laid the $1.30 on this one. He's gone over this in 3 of 4, in 4 of 6, and in 6 of his last 8 on the road. Arizona, probably a top 3 hitters ballpark with that dry air in all of baseball. And oh, by the way, this lineup against left-handed pitching, 6th in team OPS. 2nd and runs batted in. We need runs. We need earned runs. Over 2.5. Lay the $1.30. On the other side, Gary Sheffield Jr. Don't go anywhere, guys. It's Start Money on VSiN. Back here on Sharp Money as Hour 3 moves along. Joe Cirillo right here in for Patrick Maher for most of this week. Just got word. I told you guys I'd be here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Got extended to Thursday. I guess Dustin doesn't hate me. Dustin Sweetelson, of course, he's the mainstay of the program here with me, and we're going to head back to the Progressive guest line. This is a fun one. The host of Yankees Unloaded on YouTube, Gary Sheffield Jr. Gary, how you doing, man?
Fellas, I'm doing good. I mean, the New York Yankees are making trades. We haven't done everything I wanted, but hopefully we can make some people some money gambling. We'll see.
Oh, okay. Well, let's start right there, Gary. I haven't done everything you wanted. What is atop your wish list? You got Jazz Chisholm, and I also want your take on that deal, of course. Now there's rumors they might be shopping, looking to unload. After all, it is Yankees Unloaded, right? They're looking to unload Nestor Cortez. What is atop your wish list for the team in pinstripes?
Well, you know what? We brought a couple people on our podcast this week, and we brought Bob Nightingale on, and he said, you can't rule out Gleyber Torres being traded. He's actually the one guy I want traded. I know he's swinging a hot bat of late, but I mean, he would have asked him, hey, can you move to third base? And the guy said, no, I don't want to play third base. I want to play second base. Well, Dustin, you know the funny part about that. He leads the league in errors.
He's horrible.
So he's bad. Okay. And mind you, what he's good at is hitting. And we're asking you to move defensively. A very simple ask. There shouldn't be an issue here, but there is. So I'm of the idea that if you're in a contract year and you will not move positions, you're not good at what you do, I want you gone. Give me a Jonathan India.
Oh, Gary, we're right up the same alley here, because Gleyber Torres, you said the best thing he does is hitting. He's only been hitting over like the last like 30 days, maybe 20 days. He's been awful in the field, awful at the plate. And I'm a big believer that baseball clubhouses, what happens in there carries over onto the field. I think a lot of the Dodgers' success in the regular season, it's 162 games, and the core of that team came up in the system together. They went through the grind together. And now you got a guy saying, I'm not going to move positions for another guy who we're bringing in who's better than me at the plate and in the field. I don't like those vibes for these Yankees right now.
He's lethargic. Gleyber Torres is just a lethargic baseball player to watch. He's not enjoyable. I mean, you don't have to be a Yankees fan to notice this. You can turn on Yes Network for a moment. He's more than likely going to show you a player that's just lackadaisical. He's lacking execution. He's not coachable. He doesn't want to move around the field. So, Dustin, I mean, I'm of the mentality that if you're not a key performer, you really don't have the slack to be this type of character in the locker room. If you're a distraction at all and you're not a key contributor, what are we really talking about here?
No. Let's go big picture here, because they're in on Jack Flaherty. There's a lot of names that they're in. They're floating Nestor Cortez. But a lot of this comes back to Brian Cashman for me, and I don't know where you come down on this, but I don't understand the job security of Brian Cashman. He was literally building these Yankees teams, or Gene Michaels built these Yankees teams, and he gets a lot of credit for the success. When I was in elementary school, and somehow, through these large gaps of winning World Series, it's the New York freaking Yankees. There shouldn't be this many years where you're not competitive, making a push for a World Series title. Where do you come down on Brian Cashman in the hot seat for him?
It seems like he's grandfathered in. Like, he's just got something on ownership where they just cannot fire this guy. And I think we've all worked for businesses where there's just an unfireable employee. Brian Cashman's that employee. It's like the coach's son being on the team. And there's nothing that we really can break down, the X's and O's, the lack of execution, the lack of development. How many players can people name, not just me, anybody, that the Yankees have developed into being stars in this league? You can name one, and his name's Aaron Judge. He's been here a while. Outside of that, you'd say, oh, you'd assume, well, Gleyber Torres, at least 2 years ago, was a really good player for the Yankees. Maybe they developed him. Wrong. Traded from the Chicago Cubs. So the Yankees, just in general, don't have anything to be proud of other than outside sources of talent they brought outside this organization. Brian Cashman, for a $300 million payroll, for the team to look like this is just ridiculous in itself. I'm still hopeful for this Yankees team as the season progresses, but should it even look this bad? Should it be at this place for how much money we've spent in comparison to a lot of these teams in baseball? I say you shouldn't. And the fact that it looks this way, I mean, it's an indictment on Cashman in itself, and he really, frankly, shouldn't have a job.
Wow. There it is, folks. Well, the Yankees still favored to win the American League East moving forward. I think it's more of a brand association favorite, because I think the Baltimore Orioles are head and shoulders better than the Yankees. Gary, looking at the Orioles, what do you think they do here in the next 24 hours as we approach the deadline?
You know, I've heard, a little birdie told me, that the Baltimore Orioles are still looking at Blake Snell. Now, Blake Snell's on a team right now where you're saying, okay, are they buying? Are they selling? Because the Los Angeles Dodgers, they're a wounded animal right now, okay? They've got Teoscar Hernandez, who's swinging a really hot bat, but they've got a lot of injuries over there in L.A., and there's question marks in their rotation. Now, can these be filled at the deadline? Absolutely, and it can change how San Francisco views their team. I've heard Baltimore's looking at Snell. I know they've been looking maybe perhaps at a Flaherty. We know Tarek Skubal. They've been scouting him all week, but rumor is that they're going to have to actually part with Jackson Holiday. Do they want to give up that much to get the player that potentially might be a short-term relief and maybe not enough to win a World Series? We're going to find out in the next coming days.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. And right now, your New York Yankees, they're up 4.5 games in the American League, Gary. But here's the thing. In our betting community, certain bets start making the rounds. They become super trendy. And I know as of yesterday, a lot of people in this world thought 17-1 on the Yankees to miss the playoffs was an interesting bet. Do you think there's any chance that happens?
For us to miss the postseason, I don't think that happens. I think that you can absolutely be disappointed in the short-term path the Yankees have towards a World Series championship. No doubt about it. You can call us pretenders. We are the Dallas Cowboys,
yes,
okay, as of now. We're more than likely going to scratch the surface into the postseason. We've got plenty of moves still to make in order to be a real contender. But I completely agree with you. I don't think Baltimore is worried about the Yankees of yet. But I will say the Yankees have a couple moves they can make to make Baltimore worry about us. But until then, I mean, I don't see any world where the Yankees don't go into the postseason.
Gary, in that division right there, what the hell is going on with Tampa Bay, man? I mean, here they are, two games over 500, just 2.5, I believe, out of the sixth seed, legitimate shot at making the playoffs. And it looks like a full fire sale going on there by the Rays. Can you make sense of it? Or is it as simple as they're just a cheap organization and they refuse to do anything else besides, you know, look for bargain budget shopping?
Well, to answer your question directly, they absolutely are a cheap organization. We can't skate around that. I mean, I'm not going to do that. They're playing baseball. I know we call them the Tampa Bay Rays. They are the St. Petersburg Rays. For those of you who have traveled to the stadium, has nothing to do with Tampa. It's not close to Tampa, so they are that. Yep. They are a cheap organization. And for them, this is the best thing that could have happened because it showed multiple assets, especially in their lineup, that were tradable assets that will eventually become cheap and controllable players, and all these guys they're returning back in trades. That's what they're after. They're not after winning championships, and I know they've done a lot, maybe going deep into a postseason, but the way they look at it is that's just a bonus. They're looking for sustainable, long-term winning that is cheap, and that's just what they do, and it's unfortunate because we're talking about billionaire owners regardless of the team.
All right, we got about 2 minutes here, Gary. Gary Sheffield Jr. with us. The Yankees. And what some people think is a preview of the World Series potentially taking on the Phils tonight. Two-part question. Luis Gil, how concerned are you about him down the stretch just because it's a young arm and it's a long season? And two, how do you feel about their chances against the Phillies here on the road?
Well, I don't like their chances against Philadelphia. Let's be very clear about that. Philadelphia is the team I have winning the World Series, and baseball is super unpredictable. I mean, the team everyone predicts to win the World Series hardly ever does. But I will say, as far as Luis Gil's a guy where you just say, okay, I haven't seen you do this yet, but I can't rule you out. It's just more of a curiosity thing for me. I'm not going to make the prediction that he's going to be around in October because, frankly, we've never seen him do this. But we have to give him the opportunity to grow into those shoes. And if he can do it, the Yankees have a real star in their hands.
And Gary, looking at the Yankees now in the next, you know, 24 hours, what's atop your wish list? They obviously need pitching. You think, I heard you mention Jonathan India before. You're intrigued by him. You think they get rid of Glaber. What would be a perfect final 24 hours leading up to the deadline in your mind?
I'm going to give you more than just India. I'm going Tanner Scott. It's okay. Ooh. This is the closer, all-star closer out of Miami. And I was surprised that he wasn't part of that Jazz Chisholm package. And that's a little bit of a red flag as far as Scott goes, the fact that he wasn't a part of that package because you already know they're talking. But I will not rule that out. I think Scott and India would be the perfect fits because the Yankees in general, they need more than just one addition to this lineup. They need multiple. India's that addition. Obviously, you have Chisholm and going Scott to remove Holmes out of the closer's role because, frankly, I'll be bald by 2025 if I have to watch him.
I love it, Gary. Great stuff, man. And look, as a couple of Mets fans over here, I think we both really want Tanner Scott, too. He's the most sought-after guy in that part of the market right now. Gary Sheffield Jr., make sure you check out Yankees Unloaded on YouTube. Thank you so much for the time, man.
Thank you, fellas.
Great stuff.
Great stuff. How badly do you want Tanner Scott to come to Queens?
I also want Jonathan India, though. Grew up a Mets fan.
Yeah, I just... You know, we got Jose Iglesias right now. I mean, I don't know if we need India. OMG, taking over Queens. When we come back, we're going to get to our final best bets on the diamond. We've got Adam Burke coming on the show tomorrow, but if you head to VSiN.com right now, you can check out his daily articles, including so many of his MLB winners right there on VSiN.com. Best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, and more only on VSiN.com. Head there today to check it all out. As we get ready to wrap up this edition of Sharp Money, Joe Cirillo here in for Patrick Maher today, in for Patrick most of the week, Monday through Thursday, alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, as we get ready to wrap up the show here, go over some of our MLB plays because they were a bit scattered throughout in case anyone missed. I've got five. You've got six, I believe, on the docket, including a no-win parlay. I think we got to all of your straight plays, but you've got a parlay of three starting pitchers to not record the win. Yeah. This is an interesting one. Give it to me. What do you got?
So let's talk about the strategy behind this. So in order to record a win, what does a pitcher have to do? They have to pitch at least five innings. They have to leave the game with a win, and their bullpen has to hold said win. Okay. That's how I go in approaching this, because there's all that working against these starters. So I'm obviously going to find some underdogs on the card that I want to pair together. Now, normally when I put three together, I'm usually getting around minus 125, minus 115, somewhere in that range. But today, because one of the members of this parlay is a little bit shorter than usual in the no-win parlay, we're up to plus 123. So the first thing I did was Chris Flexen. The Chicago White Sox have won two of Chris Flexen's starts this year. We're talking going back months since the White Sox have won a game. He started. They're at home hosting the Royals, catching $1.42, Kansas City minus 170 in this one as the favorite. So Chris Flexen, that is the anchor of our no-win parlay. The next thing we do, we look for another one longer on the board, and as we touched on in three up, three down. The Washington Nationals do not hit left-handed pitching. They take on Arizona at Arizona against Jordan Montgomery. Lefty on the bump. Who's pitching for Washington? Oh, it's Mitchell Parker. Mitchell Parker, who's gotten smacked around over the course of the last few months. Going to fade him because I don't see him being eligible to pick up the win today on the road at Arizona. Well, we need a third leg here to make this really playable. So the third leg, I think the Philadelphia Phillies, and Gary Sheffield a moment ago made me feel better about this. I think they have a massive edge in this game against the Yankees. You have Zach Wheeler on the hill. Wheeler, as I mentioned, stronger in the summer months than he is early in the year. He tends to build up as the season goes along, and I just think you have a massive edge on the hill. And even if Zach Wheeler isn't recording the win when he leaves, it could be a tie game, right? And we could have that kind of situation play out. I added Luis Gil as the third leg of our no-win parlay. It pays $1.23. And I think we're getting good value.
I love that play, man. That is, you know, there are very few smart parlays. That is as smart a parlay, I think, as you can find out there with today's games. Because, you know, like you said, Flexen, he has two wins on the season, but the White Sox collectively have two wins in his starts. Then Mitchell Parker, you know, you talk about his ERA over his last five being over seven. How about this month in four starts over nine?
Yep.
I mean, Mitchell Parker, he's getting worse and worse. You're seeing a ton of regression there. And then I hope that the Luis Gil aspect of it works, because I've got the Phils first five. You've got the Phils on the game money line, similar price. And so, especially with my first five, if that hits, that's pretty correlated to yours. So we could both benefit off of that play. I like it a lot, man.
Yeah, so it's something I do almost daily. I look at the board and I go, hold on. What's working against these guys the most? Who can I pair together? It's been pretty profitable, actually. I have a winning record with these. It's been a minute since I was on that vacation, since I've thrown one out there. But going back before vacation, we were up like three or four games, about like two and a half units here.
I love it. I love it. So it's working. And then the Mitchell Parker leg also, something that, you know, kind of correlates to my straight play of over 2.5 earned runs, laying the $1.30. You're just getting, obviously, a better price by...
I think we're losing Joe's internet there. I will run through some of these plays as well before we hold out, and Joe will probably be back before we finish things up. So first, I'll give you some of Joe's plays, and he can come down and break them up, break them down if we get him back in time. It looks like, oh, we have him back. Joe is back. Good to go.
I was actually, it's funny, that was almost seamless, because I was actually just tossing it to you to go down the rest of your slate, starting with, you know, Mitchell Parker. You had straight play in that Arizona-Washington game.
Yeah, I just think it's a confluence of two angles I really like. Washington doesn't hit lefties, and Mitchell Parker's been really bad, a 9.18 ERA in July, as you mentioned before. He's also worse on the road than at home, and those home road splits do matter with a lot of these pitchers, especially younger, inexperienced ones. 4.91 versus 3.78 at home, and the Washington Nationals 28th in OPS versus left-handed pitching. We're going to back Jordan Montgomery, who was better his last time out, lay a half run minus 125 in the first five.
All right. I love it. The first five play. I'm starting to like first five plays more because, you know, handicapping pitchers is what I do best. That's kind of what I specialize in. And when you handicap starters, it's usually more predictable to call the first five than it is to cap an entire game because of all the variables. Like you pointed out when you were building your parlay, all of the variables that you need once the starting pitcher leaves the game. Seattle, Boston, we both have action on this one. Your play, straight side in this one?
Yeah, I just think you're not normally getting Logan Gilbert at a discount like this at minus 105. I get he's on the road. I get the Boston bats are pretty lively, but Seattle's kind of hot coming into this. 7.33 runs per game over the weekend. It was against the White Sox, but you hope some of that confidence carries over here. And I look at Nick Pivetta. He's gotten knocked around by these Seattle hitters, a 1.122 OPS. We went through the numbers in three up, three down, six homers in a very small sample size. Logan Gilbert's the better pitcher. Seattle is surging. I like the addition of Justin Turner today. The vibes are good. Let's back Seattle on the road against the Red Sox. Also, a bit of a letdown coming off the Yankee series for Boston.
Bingo. And we always bet based on immaculate vibes. By the way, right now, that plus 105 on the Mariners money line.
Like it even better.
And I've got two plays in this one, as I went over before. Logan Gilbert and Nick Pivetta. I'm betting on both of them. Give me the Nerfy. I laid $1.30 on this one. Pivetta hasn't been good lately, but he's also been spotty. Like every other start he'll turn in, it was good against Miami. Six shutty against the Dodgers. Gets blown up at Coors Field. One thing that had been consistent prior to his last outing at Coors, four straight Nerfies. Logan Gilbert, just a monster. I mean, 19 Nerfies and 21 starts. So I laid $1.30 on the Nerfy, and then kind of piggybacking off of you, I went same game parlay here, Mariners money line and Gilbert over 5.5 strikeouts. On MGM, I got this at plus 210. Could not love this play anymore. Gilbert's not the biggest strikeout guy, but he's still about a K per nine on the year as a whole. And this month, he's better than 10 Ks per nine. He also goes deeper into games than most guys. So if he goes six, he should get six or seven strikeouts, especially against the Red Sox team that is 29th in Ks per game at home, 9.5 per game at Fenway.
I should add, I did bet during the show Seattle to win the World Series at 25-1. It was 30-1 a couple days ago. So I couldn't find 30 anymore after the Turner trade. It seems they're going all in. Jerry DePoto is a very aggressive GM, makes a lot of moves. I think maybe there's another bat, maybe another bullpen arm coming up for them here before the trade deadline's finished. I like Seattle just because that pitching's going to keep you relevant. It's going to keep you in ball games. So 25-1, added it to the portfolio.
All right, I love it. I mean, hey, look, just get to the playoffs, right? That's going to be your biggest your biggest obstacle to hurdle here. Can they get to the playoffs? Because if they do, Logan Gilbert, Luis Castillo, George Kirby in a short series, even Miller and Wu, you know, taking turns with that four spot, scary in a short series. Yeah. Last play I've got, Paul Skeens, over 18.5 outs. I've been doing the K props. He's gone for eight or more strikeouts in eight of his last nine, but Houston's a team. You mentioned they could be prone to the K ball because they do swing for the fences a lot, but at home, they haven't so far this year. Second toughest team to strike out at home, only 6.75 per game at Minute Maid. So I went outs recorded for Skeens. He's gone over it in four of his last five, over 18.5 outs at plus money, plus 110. And Dustin, I think that leaves you with one final play, and it might be a fade of our New York Metropolitans.
Yeah, it's the Twinkies on the road, even money, because they kill left-handed pitching. They get Jose Quintana, who's very capable of being killed. It's not the Bourne identity. It's the Quintana identity. Simeon Woods Richardson, former Mets prospect, just a little fuel to the fire. I like him going against his former team, show them what they're missing out on. And he's also been really solid in July with a 2.86 ERA, really solid all year long. I've liked what I've seen out of him. Let's take the better offense with a pitcher who has a chance to be really good with an edge today. I'll back Minnesota at even money.
You know, I talked about the Nerfy before with Seattle, Boston. This one would intrigue me if anyone else was pitching for the Mets. Woods Richardson, 16-1 to the Nerfy this
year. Wow.
And the Mets in July, 24 games, 21-3 to the Nerfy, the New York Mets. But Quintana just 13-7. Like anyone else, if it was Manaea, if it was Seve, anyone else, I'd be going Nerfy here. I can't with with Jose Quintana because of everything you just said, Dustin. This was a blast, my man. What do you say? Let's do it again manana. But don't go anywhere, guys. Tim Murray and JVT up next with VSiN Primetime.